and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing just after midnight on Friday morning. Joining us from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where at the center on Thursday night, where Tim Bontemps watched the 76ers get beaten by the New York Knicks in a much-needed win for the Knicks coming out of the break. And Mr. Bontemps, hello.
Hello. Watch Kyle Lowry get whacked in the head, too, with a giant gash on his head in his first game back in his hometown.
Had a pretty good game, though, for Kyle Lowry.
He played great. He was one of the few good things for the Sixers in a very, very poor overall performance for them coming out of the break. He and Tyrese Maxey were great. Everybody else, not so much.
And joining us from Dallas, Texas, at the American Airlines Arena, where he watched the Dallas Mavericks beat the rival Phoenix Suns, Luka, 41 points, and his 12th tech of the year, which meant he had to do a pool report. Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. I told you, boys, I didn't get measurements, but I do believe it was an all sub 6 foot crew. And you know what that means. Now, having said that, the tee didn't come till 34 seconds were left in the third quarter. And Luka was a chatty fella coming out of the All-Star break. He got the tech for abruptly throwing the ball at the official with force.
Abruptly
with force. Not for yep, yep. There was one of the funnier things. I forgot which ref he was arguing with at one point, but the ref interrupted Luka and Luka yelled, "I'm talking." The ref should have said, "Aren't you always?" But no, listen, 7 straight wins for the Mavs. We'll get into his later dominant performance from Luka, 41, 9,
and
11,
Kyrie.
Steals. Kyrie was great, 29 points efficiently. This Dallas team is defending. Like I said, we'll dig into them a little bit later on.
How many times have you had a pool report about a Luka situation so far this season?
Not too many.
By the way, hold real quick. I'm sorry. So that our listeners know, a pool report, a reporter goes and speaks on behalf of all the reporters to the referees after the game, which McMahon seems to frequently be the man selected.
Yeah, and so there's been a couple. There was one that I declined a request from somebody who's got a whole lot of money in his bank account because those are supposed to be requested by the media. But no, not too many. It's just
more money in his bank account now than he did, you know, a few months ago.
Oh, yeah. The thing about it, though, really, it's just it is his 12th, unless it's rescinded. 16th an automatic suspension. So kind of at the point where every Luka T is going to probably be a pool report because they have greater meaning. And it's funny, Jay Kidd was asked a question about, you know, players on his team who tend to get, you know, animated with referees. And Jay Kidd goes, "It's a player." The other one was shipped off to Charlotte. And by the way, Grant Williams does nothing but win with the Charlotte Hornets.
You're making a joke, but it's actually accurate. The Hornets are ripping off wins left and right ever since their trade deadline.
And Grant Williams has been on fire from the moment he got there.
I will say this. If you're going to keep going to the referee's locker room after every Luka tech, if you keep up your heightest commentary, you're going to get banned from being down there too, McMahon.
Where?
The referee locker room.
I don't go to the referee locker room. They do them on Zoom, you bozo.
Oh, well.
I mean, Shay, listen, this is, you know what? I don't tell you how to operate in green rooms. Don't tell me how to operate with pool reports.
Fair enough.
McMahon is the master.
Fair enough. All right. Well, the biggest victory that I think happened in the NBA on the first night back from the All-Star break happened in Oklahoma City with the Thunder whipping the LA Clippers by 22 points in a game that was not only amongst, you know, two teams that could contend to win the West, but was determining the tiebreaker. Mm-hmm. Between the team in second versus the team in third. They were separated by a half game coming in. Now it's a game and a half. And a spectacular performance up and down the roster by the Thunder. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander with 31 points. Jalen Williams, the starting wing, not the reserve big man, with 18 points and some spectacular defense. And Chet Holmgren. You know, can you call them the big three? Is it too soon? Yeah, okay.
No, definitely.
No. It's not too soon when they're near the top of the West standings. One guy's an MVP candidate. The other two guys are clearly going to get fun max contracts on their next deals.
No, those are their building blocks.
We'll see what happens with the rookie of the year. But, you know, they could go MVP, rookie of the year, and Jalen Williams could make the all defensive team. I mean, that's, you know, that's legit. Anyway, Chet had 17, 10, 3 assists, 3 blocks in this game. And just a spectacular performance by the Thunder coming out of the gate. But that's not what Bontemps wants to talk about in this game.
Uh-oh. The USWB, baby. That's your music.
No, listen. We have talked a lot this year about how important it was that Chet Holmgren came into training camp and started playing center right away. And for all the things that that did for the Thunder. And the biggest thing that it did, in theory, was get their 5 best players on the court: Shai, Josh Giddey, Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren, and Lu Dort. Been their starting 5 all year. And we have talked on this pod a lot about the awkward fit of Josh Giddey with that group. And at some point, are the Thunder going to consider making a change? In the first 7 minutes of this game today, they were getting boat raced by the Clippers with Ivica Zubac sitting in the paint and guarding Josh Giddey, and really not guarding Josh Giddey. Same thing that McMahon saw the Dallas Mavericks do very effectively right before the, right after the trade deadline, when the Thunder went into Dallas and got absolutely demolished, and they just basically ignored Josh Giddey the whole game to great effect. And in the second half tonight, Mark Daigneault, coach of the Thunder, sits Josh Giddey, starts Isaiah Joe. The Thunder absolutely demolished the Clippers in the second half. And I think this is potentially a pretty important day in the calendar, because if the Thunder going forward keep Josh Giddey out of the starting lineup, which to me, this sort of feels like they've been inching towards doing this for a while, and now they finally did it, whether it's with Isaiah Joe, whether it's with Cason Wallace, whoever it is that they put in that spot.
Gordon Hayward, who made his debut tonight.
Could be Gordon Hayward. Effectively. 14 points, no points. I don't think he did have a couple rebounds.
Yeah, I mean, he hadn't played since, I think, Christmas, basically. So, I mean, it'll probably take him some time to get into rhythm. Mm-hmm. But we were waiting for this move to happen at some point, because at some point during the playoffs, at minimum, it felt like this was going to happen. The fact that it happened today in a game against another elite team coming out of the All-Star break, this feels like a very significant moment. And I think if I'm these other teams in the West, I don't like this development, because I think the Thunder are a better and more dangerous team with that grouping they had out there to start the second half and with Josh Giddey coming off the bench. And I'm very curious to see if that becomes a consistent trend.
I told you guys when I saw them in Dallas, and I've seen the Thunder several times this year, I saw them lose to Minnesota when they put Gobert on Giddey, and Gobert just clogged the paint up and destroyed them defensively in that game. I saw them beat the Celtics when Giddey made the Celtics pay for putting Kristaps Porzingis on him. But I told you after they came through Dallas that I had pretty significant doubts about Josh Giddey being able to play extensive minutes during the playoffs. Just for the it's a tough league. Unless you are a dominant on-ball player who's got the ball in his hands, which he's a good on-ball player, but he's not going to have the ball in his hands when you've got the MVP candidate sharing the backcourt with you. If you can't shoot and you're not a rim runner, it's a really hard league to play in, especially come playoff time. And like, it's not like he's their 5th best defender in the starting lineup as well. So it's not like, well, you need his defense. He is one of their better rebounders. And, you know, if it's going to be an Isaiah Joe or a Cason Wallace, like a very small team would get significantly smaller. You know, that's
where Hayward maybe helps.
Right. You know, he's a better rebounder than Hayward, but Hayward, you're not sacrificing a lot of size, nor would you be sacrificing a lot of playmaking ability. But I mean, look, they've got that. It is a big three, right? SGA is an MVP candidate. Probably going to be back-to-back rookie of the year runner-ups, but guys who are like both Chet Holmgren and Jalen Williams are phenomenal two-way players that are versatile on both ends of the floor. Lu Dort is going to be a fixture. He is their best wing defender, one of the best wing defenders in the league. That's why, Wendy, you said maybe Jalen Williams for all defensive team. I think if they're getting all defensive player of those
yeah,
two.
Yeah, I agree, but I'm just saying he's that level of player. If he doesn't make it this year, he might make it someday.
Yeah, and if you ask Daigneault about him, he'll talk about a lot how hard he competes, how great he is on defense. And then you get to the fact that he's one of the most efficient near 20-point-per-game scorers in the league. But again,
right now the fit is awkward with Giddey. Long term, I just don't see it.
Well, long term, maybe, but I don't think he'll be taken out of the starting lineup. And I do think this is the second or third time this year he's not started the second half. I think it's something that they can go to if they feel like the need is there. And you guys might be right. It might be something you see in the playoffs. Real quick, I want to say something about Isaiah Joe real quick. Earlier this week, Bontemps went to a press conference in Brooklyn where Kevin Ollie was named the interim head coach. And he was texting me.
I don't know where this is going.
Hang loose, big guy.
Let him talk.
Hang loose. That's why we got this podcast.
hang loose?
That's right. Just take it easy. Take it easy. And Kevin Ollie is talking about what needs to improve with the Brooklyn Nets. And he's like, we got to have more than five charges drawn and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Eesh. And Bontemps sent me that quote and I go, he doesn't actually mean they've only taken five charges all year. And so we looked it up and they hadn't taken
six.
They've taken six.
That's amazing.
By the way, as a quick now, non sequitur.
Hold on. Just hold on, Bontemps. Take it easy.
Mute him, Jackson.
Let me tell a story.
Okay.
Mute him.
So I decided to go look at this charges situation.
Ooh.
There's 43 players in the league coming into tonight who had more than six charges drawn, which is what the whole Brooklyn Nets team had. And Isaiah Joe, by the way, is like third or fourth in the league in drawing charges. And if you'd have asked me about that, I would not have known that Isaiah Joe draws that many charges, but he is a vastly improved defender. And as you guys talked about, Mark Dagenault goes with Isaiah Joe and is also can shoot the heck out of it from long range. But it's an indication of how deep this Thunder team is and how many options that they have. And while they are young and while they are limited in size, they have so many different things that they can do. And just as a side note to that, we mentioned Grant Williams playing really well for the Hornets since getting traded there. Trey Mann, who was a first-round draft pick a couple of years ago by the Thunder, had no prayer of breaking into this rotation.
None.
They were playing 10, 11 guys, and Trey Mann couldn't get into this rotation. Trey Mann is starting for the Hornets and putting up real big, significant numbers. Had another double-digit point game tonight at 21 the other night. He couldn't smell the floor for the Thunder. And so that's the thing. Like, whether or not the Josh Giddey move tonight is something we see more often, it's just a reminder of all the different things that Mark Dagenault has at his disposal. And by the way, Mark Dagenault everybody made fun of him for the LinkedIn coach, and he may not be the most recognizable guy outside Oklahoma City.
I think this guy can made fun of him for that. But go on.
How tall is he though, McMahon?
I think he's like 6'2", I would say.
I believe he's over 6 foot. He's a very good tactical coach.
Oh, he's like might be the coach of the year this year. And last year was in consideration for it. He's a great coach. And he's also a great tactical coach. And he's a great developmental coach. And the Thunder benefit a lot from both of those because they are a team that is positioned to win now while developing a ton of young talent.
Well, and that again is why the Giddey thing is so significant, because he's extension eligible this summer. He was seen as a key piece of their team. He's the second highest draft pick of all these guys, and he's not a good fit. And we've seen that throughout the year. We've talked about it a bunch. That's why today, I think on that front, is a big deal. One real quick non sequitur on the Nets, since you mentioned that. I asked Kevin Ollie, how are you going to get your team to play harder and with more energy after Sean Marks said that was a big part of why they let Jacques Vaughn go after the way they've fell apart since the Get Bucks game in December? And Kevin Ollie said, I have a list of 17 energy-generating behaviors, and we went over them all today in practice.
I bet that was a great practice.
Those energy-generating behaviors led to the Nets allowing 46 fast break points tonight in Toronto and being down by 30 for most of the second half and getting absolutely demolished in his debut. So might need to go back to the drawing board on some of that.
Well, let me tell you who is going to start for the Thunder going forward. That's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Whew. He's
pretty good.
For the next decade.
He was plus 21 tonight. Nobody else in the starting lineup was more than plus six. He was plus 21. There's the guy who made the difference in the game against his former team, the Clippers. And that's the thing about the Clippers. For as much as they have going for them and as many different ways as they can bend and as impressive as their depth is, they are not a team that has terrific size. And that is a factor when going against the Thunder. If they can't, if a team can't beat you up with size, the Thunder will probably fare a little bit better against them. And so just keep that in mind, even though I am big high. Is that a phrase, big high?
I don't think so.
I'm bigly high on the Clippers.
Clippers bench got absolutely. I'm high. I'm bigly high.
I'm bigly high.
Clippers bench got absolutely boat raced by Shea and the bench tonight.
With the sixth man of the year front runner, Russell Westbrook?
He was terrible tonight.
What?
Yeah. He was terrible.
Russ was 1 for 9 in 16 minutes. Norm Powell, minus 22. Amir Coffey, minus 22. Mason Plumlee, minus 12 in 8 minutes.
God. That's a shift. Holy Moses.
It's not great.
Minus 12 in 8 minutes. Yeah.
And look, Isaiah Joe's not going to be in the sixth man of your conversation, but he has been.
Bontemps thinks he's starting, so he won't be in the sixth
man. Hey, he's been. Obviously, we talk about, and I just wrote this big story on the whole Paul George trade and how that laid the foundation for the Thunder to be contenders for years to come. I mean, SGA, Jalen Williams, picks and picks and picks that have turned into picks and picks and picks. Still on the way from that. Some of Sam Presti's best work, though, was a waiver claim on Isaiah Joe, who is not just a shooter, but he's a shooter who flies all around the floor, you know, like just bends defenses. And then you mentioned the Chargers thing. I forget the weight class, but Dagenau refers to him, I think it's lightweight, like a lightweight fighter. Because he's 165 pounds, but he's tough. He's adds tough to
take.
Toughness.
He's like taking 20 charges this year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, like, look, Shea was a centerpiece of the trade for Paul George. Chet Holmgren was picked second. Jalen Williams is a lottery pick. Cason Wallace is a lottery pick. Like, they got some premium players here. However, you're right. Isaiah Joe was a waiver claim.
Lou Dort was a two-way contract undrafted.
Lou Dort, they found on the street, and Kendrick Williams, who I think is a guy who, if he was what?
Kenrich
Williams is a guy who I think if he was on a different team would be maybe starting or getting 25, 28 minutes. Yeah. They got him as a, you know, as part of the Steven Adams trade. I think he might even have gotten signed in trade. I think they like, there's something happened there where they picked him up. Like, he was just, you know, he was just sitting in New Orleans and they got him as part of that deal. So,
and look, in the playoffs, there might be games where he plays 25 or 28 minutes because he allows that he can play the four next to Chet. He can play the five and let them, you know, for example, the Suns are playing a lot of this KD at five lineup. You know, there might be times where he matches up a lot in that lineup playing the small ball five. By the way, this is some crazy stats Jackson's throwing at us. SGA, 40-plus, first player in the league with 40, 30-point games this year and has only three games where he scored under 20. The guy is like
pretty good
scoring metronome. You know, he's never had more than 44 in a game, but he averages 30-plus. It's 30 every single night. Just go ahead and pencil it in.
And doesn't
shoot three. Shooting in the mid-50s from the floor.
Yeah, I mean, that's why he... Well, he's shooting a lot more this year than he has in the past, but that's why. I mean,
he made three tonight, but he's like, his scoring is not predicated on 3-point
shots. Right. No, and look, that's why he, I mean, that consistency and obviously leading this super young team is why he's, you know, probably the prime alternative to Nikola Jokic, who, by the way, became the first guy ever in the history of the league to have 15, 15, 15 on 100% shooting tonight in a win over the Wizards. Not bad.
That's a stat that could stand for a while.
It's pretty good. It's a pretty good stat.
15, 15, 15. That's awesome. And the Nuggets, forget about what you shot. The Nuggets had lost three in a row.
Yeah.
Although they did lose Kentavious Caldwell-Pope in this game to a finger sprain. He's been in and out of the lineup for them. But it was against the Wizards.
By the way, folks in Dallas are perturbed about that straw poll, Bontemps. We've got podcasts, newspaper stories. People are mad.
Everybody's mad at me about that. Everybody's mad at me in Boston. Everybody's mad at me in Cleveland. Everybody's mad at me in Dallas. That's how it goes.
They say that Luka being one of the four legitimate candidates for MVP is not enough.
Not enough.
And hey, I'll say this, the biggest argument against him was that they were in the play-in when that poll was taken. They climbed out of the play-in tonight. They've got the tiebreaker against those Suns now.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So 7 wins in a row, definitely a team on the move. And they had to be on the move, McMahon, because the Lakers and Warriors, who are finishing up their game right now, the Warriors are winning. Lakers and Warriors are making moves behind them. They are, you know, you can debate about whether they're actually going to lead to anything, but they are coming from behind them. And the top four teams in the West have pretty much, you know, put themselves out apart from the others. And Phoenix has been a strong team when they've had their big three together. So, and even New Orleans. So I think they win over Houston on Thursday. I think they've won 7-8. So if you're going to make it, if you're going to do anything in that Western Conference, you got to go, boy. And the Mavericks have, especially since Kyrie came back. And, you know, they didn't even get much production from their new players tonight. It was their old superstar who was getting the job done tonight.
Well, and both are superstars. I mean, Kyrie and Luka combined for 70 points on 45 field goal attempts. And those two guys, the last year obviously didn't go great because they couldn't stop anybody. They've been very good as an offensive duo. They've been elite as an offensive duo this year. They do play well off of each other. They've developed chemistry, despite the fact that I don't know what the game total is up to this year, but it's not very high. The Mavericks have been a team that's dealt with a ton of injuries all season long. Kyrie being the front runner of that, the top guy. That's what I mean. And they are close to being completely healthy at this point. Dante Exum's practiced. He'll practice again tomorrow. They're hoping to have him back on this upcoming road trip. He's the only guy who missed tonight. And he's, I don't know what exactly his role is going to be, but he had established himself as a guy who was going to be a starter. I don't know if that's still going to be the case, but he can help them. I'm telling you, as much as the focus is obviously going to be on the guys who they gave up significant draft capital to get before the deadline, PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford, who have contributed, getting Maxi Kleba back healthy and looking like himself has been the most significant development of these last couple of weeks. I know he's not a big name. I know he's not a guy who, like, if you look at the box score, and I'm like, what are you talking about? The guy had 7 points, 2 rebounds, like whoop-de-damn-do. But if you watch this Mavericks team a couple of years ago when they made that West Finals run, Maxi was playing 30 plus. He's the guy who ties everything together defensively. And it's not going to be 48 minutes of rim runner at center, because Maxi's going to play a lot of center, especially when teams try to go small on him.
Well, that's the other thing. It also means that they don't have to play a rookie 35 minutes if they don't want to.
Well, and that's also what getting Gafford was. It was also insurance if Lively's been out a lot, gets hurt again. But tonight, Lively played 16 minutes as a starter. Gafford played 17 minutes. Maxi played 26 minutes. You're like, hold on, that doesn't add up to 48. It's because for the first time since Maxey's been back, he played a fair amount at the four. And that's a very, very interesting look, because they might need to go big to match up with big, say if they run into the Minnesota Timberwolves. Or tonight, they actually, the Suns went small after the Mavs built a nice lead in the third quarter, and they got cooking. They spaced them out and got cooking. And J.K. basically said, you know what? Let's try to go big against their small, because Maxey's a guy who can guard one through five. And, you know, the hope was Gafford would come in there and kind of clean up on the glass. And it worked. So Maxey is just provides them so much versatility and depth. And I do think there's going to be a lot, if not most of the games, where they will close with him at the five, despite having spent a lottery pick and given up a future, you know, key draft swap to get these rim running centers.
Yeah. I mean, he's always been, so to your point, he's always been really the key piece for them when they've played really well. It's always been when Maxey's been healthy and rolling at that five spot, because he is just such a smart, solid guy who fills in a ton of gaps. And like you said, you look at his per game numbers or his individual box score numbers and you go, well, this doesn't seem all that impressive, but you watch, he makes just a ton of smart plays. He always knows where to be, and he's a winning player who creates winning basketball. And, you know, he's had these various injury ailments. He's been dealing with his toe issue, and so he's never really been a huge minute guy or out there as much as they would like. But like you said, you get him out there in a stretch like this, and he's playing well and healthy and looking good. Matt Dallas looks like a dramatically different team. And now you look at the West standings, and we talked about the other day, you've kind of got the separation from one to four, and now from five to eight after tonight's action. New Orleans got 22 losses. Dallas and Phoenix have 23 losses. Sacramento, after pulling out a late win against San Antonio, also has 23 losses. So 5-8, basically in a tie in the loss column. And after the Warriors beat the Lakers, they're 3-4 back in the loss column. So you sort of got it separated that way. And it's a pretty good chance that's how it's going to wind up. So it should be some fun races here down the stretch.
And the one thing the Mavs have an advantage on, all those other teams, they do have the best player. And I say that with all due respect to Kevin Durant, Devin Booker. Luka right now is the best player of that bunch. You know, De'Aaron Fox, Sabonis, Zion's, whatever. And Luka is doing it on both ends of the floor. You know,
oh my God, I've never heard that before.
Listen, four steals again tonight. I told you there's nerdy numbers out there that tell you he's statistically been one of the best ISO defenders and one of the best post-up defenders in the league this year. Now, look.
Well, I believe he's a good post-up defender.
Yeah.
He's a strong man.
He is.
Look,
so
he's just got to show more effort and not be getting killed.
He is.
Well,
so,
and also get back.
Get
you
back.
Can't play defense if you're not back.
That's what I'm saying. It's part of more effort. Like just doing, he just has to do some of the basic stuff.
Get back and stay engaged when he's in a help situation. But he is he's a bigger version of Houston James Harden, who they would switch a ton. And, you know, he can switch, he can guard multiple positions. You're not going to take advantage of him as a mismatch in the post because he's a bull.
Hell no.
And he's competing. He's in shape. His ankle's fine. He did get smacked in the face today with the ball and then Grayson Allen's hand and is squaring his broken nose. I asked him how it felt. He said it's still broken. So he wasn't too worried about it. But, he's very proudly competing and holding his own on the defensive end right now. And that is like night and day from last year.
Well, they are to be paid attention to. They are a dangerous team because of him. Because, you know, if you get into a playoff series that's 2-2, or not even before that, I don't care what the team's seeding is. I don't care what any of these teams' seedings are in the West. Yeah. I guess if you're Minnesota and you're Oklahoma City and you just don't have a lot of playoff experience together, you'd like to start and end playoff series at home. I don't care what Dallas's seed is. I don't care what the Lakers, if they get in seed or the Warriors seed, even the Suns to a certain extent. But, you know, if Luka can truly be a factor on defense, and so much of the story about the Western Conference is size. So much when you look at these two games or these teams is who can handle size and who doesn't. Because it's almost like you can go down the line and say, this team does well with size, this team doesn't. And the Suns are a team that doesn't deal well with size because they have trouble playing with it. You know, you mentioned them going small. The Suns, I think, just because of trial and error and because this is what seems to work, the Suns have been really leaning into playing lineups with Durant at center, which is what I didn't see the game tonight. I assume that's what they did.
They did that a lot. And like the Mavs came out, they were down three at the half. And they came out and just lit it up in the third quarter. Threes. Luka hit three of them, fed on two of them, 15-0 run to come out. And then the Suns went small. They got back in the game. Mavs went small to match up with it. It actually didn't work that time around. That's when they came back with the big lineup, bumping Maxey to the four, bringing Gafford in. But then they went back. And let's see. Nurkic played 19 and a half minutes. Eubanks only played six, and those didn't go well. It was the minus 10. And then, you know, they played small. So that's 23 minutes of small.
Seriously,
ball.
You go down every team. You look at like, okay, what's Golden State doing? Golden State's been going smaller. Draymond's now been their starting center. They replace Klay Thompson, the starting lineup, with Brandon Pajemski. They're playing smaller and they're winning. The Lakers have been going bigger with Rui Hachimura in there. What's going on in Phoenix? They're going smaller, playing more Durant center. You just talked about how the Mavericks, after acquiring size of the deadline, are now playing a seven-footer back at power forward with Kleba going to play a lot more four. And we know that the Wolves have played big all year long. So, like, to me, this is a huge factor in how the matchups are going
to
go.
And then you've got to go through the defending champs who are huge and have a seven-footer who – but that's the thing. Maybe you go small against the Nuggets and just try to outscore them because, breaking news, nobody in the West can stop Joker. Nobody.
Yeah.
Well, he has dominated – Anthony Davis in a Western Conference Finals. He hit a series-winning shot over Rudy Gobert in the bubble. Like, there's nobody in the world who can stop Joker. It's just not happening.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a bunch. I think it's just the West is going to be so dictated by the individual matchups of these teams and who matches up with who. Even more than size in particular, it's just certain teams match up a lot better with other teams. We've seen it as the year has played out, and it truly, I think, is going to come down to, you know, like we saw last year with the Lakers. The Lakers got a favorable couple of draws and they took advantage of it and got to the conference finals. And like, there's a chance where one of these lower seeded teams gets the right couple of matchups and is in the conference finals. You might look up and go, man, how did so-and-so get there? And if they get the right draw, it could play out that way. I will say, though, really don't like Kevin Durant playing 20, 25 minutes at center. I understand they don't have a lot of options, and that's the way their team is built. But playing him, if he's going to be consistently playing 20, 25 minutes at center, I'm going to knock on wood as I say this. I don't want it to happen. I'm afraid that's going to end up with him getting banged up.
Well, and I'll say this. I agree, I say KD at center. It's really KD is the tallest player out there because a lot of that time, for example, Royce O'Neal was actually playing center defensively.
Right. They've played... I was at a game. I was at a Suns game
but
this
that's
year.
Also not, like, that's also just not going to work.
Right. Well, I was at a Suns game this year where Josh Okogie played, and I don't mean like a couple of possessions because of transition matchups.
Right.
Josh Okogie was the designated defensive center for
three, four, five minutes.
But they've leaned into it. Part of the reason why they acquired Royce O'Neal at the deadline was to effectively play with all wings.
And by the way, I asked Stats Williams today during that third quarter. I said, you know, what are the KD at center lineups? What are the numbers this year? And I thought they were going to be good. I was dead wrong on that. -7.7 net rating. Now, like you said, part of the reason they went out and got Royce O'Neal was to be able to beef those lineups up. There's Booker's missed a ton of time. Beal's missed a ton of time.
Beal was out tonight with the hamstring, and Will sounds like going to be out tomorrow.
Yeah, Frank Vogel said he's unlikely to play against the Rockets. But again, that's also just like, hey, that's part of it. I mean, Beal's been hurt for the majority of the year. Beal came in too. He arrived in Phoenix with major durability issues. He's a $50 million bonus. It's a bonus if he's on the floor. I don't think you can rely on him.
Well, I know. And that is the inherent problem with the Suns that we've talked about from the moment they made the Beal trade. Right? Like, they have put together three very talented guys who have been unable to stay on the court consistently. And this year, for the most part, they've been able to have Booker and Durant out there more regularly than they have been in the past. But the Beal thing has continued to be a problem. And again, anytime you hear about a guy who's had this many muscle injuries, having hamstring tightness, and that all the talk was he was going to be ready to play today, and all of a sudden now he's not playing in either this game or the game Friday. All right, well, how long is he going to be out? And again, we're talking about a situation where if you're the Suns, and I mean, again, if you're one of these 7-8 teams and you've got the Lakers and Warriors sitting at 9-10, two like live teams, and all these teams are flawed, obviously.
I know where this is going. I know where this is going.
You don't want to be sitting there in that, and I think you might have said this the other day, McMahon. You don't want to be sitting there in the 8-9 game looking at Steph Curry or LeBron James and being one loss away from going home.
Can you imagine if the Lakers, Warriors, and Suns are in the play-in?
Dude, ooh, it could be the Lakers, Warriors, Suns, and Mavericks in the play-in. Easily.
Possible.
Easily.
Ooh.
Possible.
You could have two of those teams make the playoffs.
If it's right now, it's Suns, Kings is 7-8, Lakers, Warriors is 9-10. So like,
it's very possible at least three of those teams are in there, if not all four of them.
Well, you're talking about how matchups dictate everything in the West, Bontemps. The matchup challenge for the Suns could be that injury report.
Yeah.
Because when those three guys are healthy, like they could make a run if they're all healthy.
When they don't have the third guy, they're just so light on playmaking.
Yeah, the one-star lineups have been a problem all season whenever they've happened.
They're extremely easy to defend. The Mavs held them to 50 points in the second half. And KD didn't shoot it great tonight. But like I said, even tonight, KD plays 40 minutes. Booker plays 39. So I got to do math, which is difficult. But that's 17 minutes of one-star, I think so. 17 minutes of one-star lineups. And those were not pretty because there's nobody else that you're worried about. Now, you don't want to give Grayson Allen good looks. You don't want to give Eric Gordon good looks. But, like, they were fine giving Royce O'Neal looks. They were begging Josh Okogie to get threes. I mean, Sabin Lee played 6 minutes. It was like, please,
will you shoot the ball? Yeah, and none of those guys, like Grayson Allen, fantastic shooter, right? Not really a threat to put the ball on the floor and make
nobody
plays,
you're worried
especially
about
not
doing
for anybody else.
No, let
nobody,
them. They want him to dribble. Every time
well,
he
dribbles,
it's a win.
Nobody you're worried about putting pressure on you as far as breaking a defense down.
And that's where it's so hard for those guys in those one-star lineups because it's like, all right, if for as good as Kevin Durant and Devin Booker are, if it's like you got to come down and make a play for yourself or somebody else every single time down the
court.
And
by the way, here comes a second defender at you.
Right. And then it's like, all right, let's throw the ball to somebody else. Like, yeah, there'll be nights where those guys will go off hitting shots. But
sure,
it's just a huge load to have to carry over and over again, which is why
it's not something that you're going to win three playoff series with.
Right. Which is why from the beginning, it has that if with the injury stuff, it's why we've talked about it so much because it is so important. And if they are able to find a way to have those three guys on the court from mid-April to whenever their season's done, they will be really dangerous. And if any one of them is out, all of a sudden, they're pretty far down the pecking order, I think, in the West, just because of all the other disadvantages they got on the roster for the sheer fact that they just didn't have a lot of depth from the beginning of the season because of the limitations they're on from a roster building standpoint.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
All right, Bontemps, let's swing over to the Eastern Conference where you saw the Knicks tonight. Knicks got some guys back coming out of the All-Star break. They badly needed it after, I would say, was a so-so injury report from the injured players from the Knicks. Specifically, Julius Randle, who, you say, you know, the Knicks were being purposely vague about his situation and acting like everything was probably going to be okay. And Julius comes out on Wednesday and says, yeah, I could. It's possible I still could need surgery.
Yeah,
that wasn't good news.
Well, I would say, I mean, just to be clear about it, the reason I'm saying that is because it's really what we've been saying the entire time is what Julius said, right? And frankly, it's what the Knicks said the whole time, because all the Knicks would say was, because he got hurt at the beginning of February, all the Knicks said at the time was he's going to be reevaluated in 2 to 3 weeks. Didn't say like he's not going to have surgery. Didn't say he's going to have surgery. Just said he's going to rehab. We'll see where he's at later this month. And every time Tom Thibodeau got asked about it, or every time the Knicks were supposed to give some sort of update about it, it was just, well, Julius is progressing. He's looking good. Tibbs would get asked directly, is he definitely not going to have surgery? No, can't say that. And then Julius, to his credit, just sat there on Wednesday and talked to the media and said, hey, look, I can't really know for sure how this is going to go until I start contact and hitting people and seeing how this goes. And as we know, Julius is a freight train and kind of has to play that way. And we'll see if his shoulder will hold up. I was only saying that because this has been the story from the moment he got hurt. We haven't really been sure if he's going to avoid surgery or not. And we might not know until he all the way is back on the court again.
Well, his co-star went through something similar in Dallas his second year. Jalen Brunson didn't go to the bubble because he had shoulder surgery and that was something where he came back and tried to play through it. And then finally, it was just like, well, okay, I've got to get the operation because it never got right until
that's the way so many of these shoulder surgeries go, especially for big guys. They come back and they re-aggravate it. They re-dislocate it.
Julius is so physical. He's one of the most physical players in the league. I mean, he's probably right up there with Giannis in terms of how much he's using his size and strength to maneuver around and, you know, create space on defenders and stuff. So that's going to be a significant thing. But OG Anunoby progressing well, Mitchell Robinson progressing well, and they got back Isaiah Hartenstein, Bojan Bogdanovic, who had a great game, hit 6 for 6 from 3, at 22 points. And Dante DiVincenzo, who's been fantastic for a couple of months now in the starting lineup, he got back as well. And they played very well against the Knicks and got back on track after having a 4-game slide going into the break.
Yeah, look, they're on the road in Philly, and Brunson goes 5-18. It was hardly a banner night for him. I know Hartenstein was back, but he didn't play that well.
Well, he only played, it was interesting, he only played 11 minutes before the game, because he's been dealing with Achilles soreness, which, as we all know, that's a scary thing to be hearing, especially for a guy who's played great and is going to be a free agent in 5 months. But Tom Thibodeau said he was going to play in short stints tonight. And
he did.
He played a short stint to start the game and a short stint to start the third quarter. And that was it. Didn't play after that.
Right. But anyway, they got the win and by double digits. And so that was a needed one. Like, you know, it's one thing if Brunson comes out and scores 37, but they went on a night where Brunson is a little bit off. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, getting Bojan Bogdanovic was so important, is that he gives them firepower, especially off the bench. And he had a terrific game. And Mac, you know, overcoming Maxi having a 35-point game. So, and an interesting little two-game stretch here for the 76ers, who are fighting to stay out of the play-in zone themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They get
By the way, they are 6-15 without the MVP of the league, who is not going to be back in the near term. Now, you can say a lot of that is because they have been down so many guys, because they have...
Yeah, Tobias was back tonight, but didn't play well.
Yeah, Nick Batum came back today, but D'Anthony Melton has been out. They just got Kyle Lowry back today. Maxey and Harris have both been sick off and on for weeks. All these guys have been out, but at the same time, they've really been scuffling a lot, and their schedule's difficult for the next few weeks. They got Cleveland on Friday. You know, we'll see what happens with Donovan Mitchell. He did not play in their return from the break. A good win for Orlando in Cleveland over the Magic, but over the Cavs, I mean. But
what was Donovan's issue?
I believe he was out with an illness.
Oh.
But he, you know, and then they have the Bucks and Doc Rivers coming back here and Patrick Beverly, I should probably add after some of the stuff he's said lately on Sunday. But yeah, it's pretty interesting times for the Sixers because obviously, again, they're another team that would love to not be having to deal with the play-in come early April. And also, if Joel Embiid, let's say he can come back in late March, if he's sitting there healthy and ready to go by the end of the regular season, if he's sitting in sixth, seventh, or eighth, you know, if you're Boston, you've been the best team all year. Like, man, I would pick them to beat the Sixers, but still, if you have to deal with Joel Embiid in the first round of the playoffs, he's healthy and ready to go. That would not exactly be an ideal start to the postseason. So a lot of interesting stuff in both conferences, the way these things are.
Well, with that win in Cleveland tonight, Orlando is now a game and a half back of Philly in fifth, and Indiana is a game back.
And Indiana, Orlando, Miami, all tied in the loss column. 6-7.
I was gonna say, you know, listen, if you're Boston, you have the best record in the league, you might get the treat of the Heat in the first round, which
which again, I would pick them to win, but is not. Yes. You don't want to be seeing Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo and Eric Spoelstra sitting there in the eighth seed in the first round of the playoffs. Just ask the Milwaukee Bucks. So, you know, there's a lot of fun. There's a lot of fun machinations to come here over the next several weeks in the East, I think, to see how this stuff shakes out. But yes, the Knicks really needed to get some guys back. They got a bunch of guys back. And, you know, this Philly thing, they're on the road a ton in March. They've been down a bunch of guys. Kyle Lowry looked really good today. I think he's going to be very good for Philly. I think he will be a very significant upgrade on Patrick Beverly, who was not very good when he was here. And
you know, you're going to start a podcast rivalry. Well,
I'm sure I will. He's had a lot of things to say on his podcast in recent days about the Sixers, shockingly, after being traded. But yeah,
That's the thing about Bev. You can't always count on Bev, but you can always count on Bev to be Bev. And so what I mean by that is, you know, that whatever team he gets to, he's going to be like, let's go. I'm here, baby.
Yes.
We're going to win it all. I'll do everything. I just got traded. Screw that team. How's my new team? We're great, baby. Yes. Like it's extremely predictable.
The intensity.
He is consistent, if nothing else.
Yeah. So I may be crazy, but I actually think that the Bucks might be okay. I can't.
I would like you to make this argument.
What the fawn?
As bad as they've looked and as worrisome as they are, their defense has improved with Doc. And even though their offense is cratered.
Small detail.
I'll say this. They're not going to be a bad offensive team.
Right.
When you have Damian Lillard and Giannis, you might have a rough stretch, but you're not going to be a bad offensive team with those two guys.
Their defense has improved. I do think their defensive systems are in better shape. They really, really could use Chris Middleton looking like anything like Chris Middleton. He had one little stretch this year where he actually looked like he got his feet back up underneath him. It was like, okay, here they go. And then he got hurt again.
Well, and by the way, he's got a sprained ankle, and I think he's already been ruled out through the weekend and was hurt before the break. And he's actually been pretty good. I mean, he's a lot like Bradley Beal, really.
What I was just thinking.
Yeah, he's been pretty good all year when he's been healthy. But again, this is a guy who's had a ton of lower leg injuries now. He's into his mid-30s, and he's missed a bunch of time. And he is such a critical guy for them on offense. And again, at the other end of the court, you talk about the defense. Let's be honest. The defense might be a little better because he is not a very good defender at this point. When you have him,
that's a long way from when they won a championship.
Right. And if you have him, Dame, and Malik Beasley out there on the perimeter, I'm sorry, you're not going to be a good defensive team, no matter who you've got.
I don't think that they're going to be good, a good defensive team, but I do think they can improve. And I think they have been improving.
When they hired Doc, I said, I don't think they've got to be, if they're an average defensive team, I think they'll have a chance because I still think they're going to be a very, very good, even elite offensive team. I'm not changing that because of a handful of game sample size of them struggling. And Wendy, as you mentioned last time, the nerdy numbers told you that there was some fluke factor that in terms of the shot quality was still very good.
I just also would like to, oh no, go ahead.
Their schedule is very hard. They have, I think, the third toughest schedule coming in, and that could undercut them. But I would just not count out, as the Celtics now open up with their win on Thursday and the Cavs lost, the Celtics now have a 7-game lead in the Eastern Conference. As that happens, I'm just saying, don't count the Bucks out. That's all.
Well, listen, what I was going to say was we haven't really talked about them a lot because they've just so consistently been dominant this season. Celtics have a plus 10.4 net rating.
Yeah.
Which is all time great, like high 60 win team kind of stuff. And I don't know if maybe they'll only end up at like 62 or 63 instead of 66 or 67, but like they are putting together the resume of a team that looks like an all time great team. And we will see if that translates to the playoffs or not. But with all the injuries in the East, with the way they are playing, it is turning into a situation where they have to be seen as the prohibitive favorites to get out of the East as of today. And if they don't get out of the East at minimum, you got to look at this as a pretty gigantic failure it sits right now.
Okay.
Does prohibitive mean they can't drink?
they have some really big TV games coming up. So we're going to get a real chance to see them play, you know, in high level and high profile games. But we just spent the last hour talking about all these teams all packed together. And then there's the team with the boat race way out front. And I mean, like, it absolutely is easy to just, you know, take them a little bit for granted.
Jackson, by the way, go ahead.
Best home scoring margin, the Celtics by over 3.5 points. Best road scoring margin,
huh? Oh, no, by 3.5.
Yeah, but like they're plus 13.7.
Plus 13.7 at home.
Yeah, OKC's plus 10.1. I was going into tonight. And then they're also the team with the best road scoring margin. I mean, they're clearly the best team in the NBA so far during this regular season.
Yeah, no, they've got to. I mean, look, all they have left to do is prove it in the playoffs. That's like they've obviously struggled in the playoffs. They've advanced deep and had all these long series. We've talked about it ad nauseum, but like they are doing everything required to look the part of a potentially all-time great team. They've just got to follow it up with the playoffs. And by the way, since you mentioned it, Brian, just looked it up on our system coming into tonight. So it's not quite updated yet, but it's close enough. Hardest strength of schedule remaining in the league: Phoenix, second, Milwaukee, sixth, Philly.
Where are the Celtics on that?
The Celtics are 27th.
Okay, I thought they might be dead last, but yeah, they were
the Magic are dead last. The Nuggets are second to last.
That's interesting.
Celtics are 27, Warriors 26, Thunder 25.
And the Warriors certainly have an advantage there. If you're charting a team that could move up out of that play-in in the West, I really do think it's Golden State because
Golden State by the metrics certainly is
out of the play-in. Wow.
Well, maybe not out of the play-in, but certainly they're in 10th. So
as of today, because I looked at this the other day, and I don't believe includes tonight's results, so I will just say that as of right now, the Warriors, I believe, are favored to get into the 7-8 game over. Yes, so. As of now, the Warriors are favored to get into the 7-8 game over the Lakers and over the Kings, in part because their schedule is so much easier and the Lakers are in the top 10 in terms of most difficult schedules.
Who's the other team in the play-in in those nerdy numbers?
The Dallas Mavericks are slightly ahead of the Phoenix Suns, and I suspect when this runs after tonight's games, I would suspect that will be flipped with the tiebreaker going to Dallas.
Yeah.
Because it's more, it's like very slightly Dallas ahead of Dallas behind Phoenix. And I suspect now it'll be the other way around.
Well, listen, I am very proud of us that we talked about like 17 different teams on this podcast and didn't talk about the Lakers and talked about the Warriors in the last 90 seconds. Because I've got to go on Get Up and First Take in the morning. Well, all I will do for 4 straight hours is talk about the Warriors and Lakers.
Oh, they're going to have you talking about Christian Wood's knee effusion?
Absolutely. Way before we talk about Isaiah Joe.
Applaud McMahon. Let's applaud McMahon, first of all, for correctly saying effusion. Big word, perfectly said, about his favorite guy, Christian Wood. Knew we had to get that right.
Player in the history of the league.
Let's play a drinking game for all of our listeners. who go back and watch Get Up and watch First Take, and we'll do a drinking game. How every time that Brian Windhorst says Isaiah Joe on either show, do a shot. If you're sitting at your desk at work, have some liquor there. Do a shot every time. I suspect you're going to be pretty sober at lunchtime.
You'll be stone cold sober. Hey, speaking of drinking, you know what? I did a quick little Google search on.
Oh no, this could go very bad.
No, Akron, Ohio breweries. I'm thinking. Oh, I'm just saying. You know, I got some fawns in mind. You know, some fawns starting to grow up here. Seedlings, Wendy might call them. Just saying. Just saying, hey, if it's going to be a Wendy bobblehead night, we might as well make a weekend of it. That's all.
I'm planning on being at the game, but I cannot believe we're back to fawns and seedlings again.
No, I'm just saying.
What a recall.
How do you spell? Oh, you're talking about like baby deer again. I was like, what is he talking about? I thought he was talking about like palm.
Yes,
fronds.
We're going to just recycle this entire insanity from the other day. Just bring it back.
I forgot about that.
Hey, happens? What happens if Giannis gets poked in the eye?
This is a Giannis dad joke, if I've ever heard one.
I have no idea.
All right. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Mr. Bontemps. Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you for listening. And we'll talk to you and see you next week.
Adios, amigos.